morning, everyone. Welcome into another episode of the Found Generation podcast, a podcast for young people. Over the past year, I've written extensively on my Substack page about the perils of social media and the importance of instead connecting in real life. So this is a topic I'm very knowledgeable, passionate, and endlessly curious about. Now, today's guest is a dear friend of mine who sits on the opposite side of the spectrum. Returning to the podcast is Eric Jackman, the social media director for MMA Fighting, which is a massive MMA news outlet. I know it sounds small, but trust me, it's big. We're not going to discuss our mutual love of MMA today, but instead, we'll talk about his love for social media, my hatred for it, how it's all changed through the years, where it's all going. Is Twitter really burning to the ground? Is the US government really going to ban TikTok? We'll discuss that, plus New York Rick, as he's known in the MMA space, and I will discuss ways to improve your relationship with social media. And also, go with me here, if there is a world where all of this disappears and social media as we know it ceases to exist. I had you on the show a little over a year ago, November 2021, we talked about social media in the sense of tips and strategies for standing out on social media, if you're an individual, an influencer, a business, big or small, and also we walked through memory lane with social media when things were a lot more joyous there. And I would argue that since we last spoke, Eric, that social media has changed more in the last 365 days, more so than in any other year-long period since its inception. So with that said, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Thank you for being here. Thank you for agreeing to do it for free. And shout out to the MMA
world. Shout out, Ariel. Shout out.
What do you think about that statement that I just made? How do you feel about that?
I don't agree in the sense that I feel like the platforms have significantly changed in the last year in a way that they haven't previously. But I agree with the attention on them, with the media attention attention of the users on them, that there is much more scrutiny and much more attention being given to how these platforms are utilized. I don't know if it has led to change yet, but I think that it will either lead to change or platforms potentially changing and disappearing. So I think we're maybe at the beginning of that, but I don't know that I've seen in the last year drastic changes happen yet.
How have you seen consumers change? Obviously, there's been a lot kind of back-end development changes, aesthetic changes on the apps, but how have consumers' habits changed in the last year?
Yeah, there's a lot more attention to how the platforms are utilizing our data. That's continued to be an ongoing conversation, but it's even heightened now as Facebook pulls back the curtain a little bit. Now also owning Instagram, there is a lot more attention to how data is being used on that platform. The sale of Twitter to Elon Musk has people turning their attention to Twitter and their practices and what's going on, on that platform behind the scenes. So the level of awareness, I think, from the user base on what is being done as platforms change their algorithms and harbor their data and then potentially use them for targeting is a much more of a topic that the common person, I think, is aware of now than it was a year ago, than it was a year before that and a year before that. So I think education on that continues to be elevated and people are diving in deeper on kind of what's going on the platform rather than just using it kind of mindlessly.
Do you ultimately see people being more mindful and conscientious of these things actually leading to them kind of shunning social media or moving away from certain platforms in favor of others? Or do you think it's just like, I know my data is being mined. I don't really care. Just accept it. It's a part of life.
I think there's some of that. I will admit, I have seen people say, I am no longer going to use Twitter because Elon Musk now owns it, or I am no longer going to use Facebook or Instagram because of their practices that have been revealed. So I think there is an element to that. I also think that social media is an unavoidable kind of thing at this point, and choosing one platform over the other is a consumer choice, but essentially they're all kind of doing a similar thing with our data and doing similar things with how they feed us content in the algorithm. So, you know, one may be 55% to your liking or 45 not, and one may be 65 or 35. Cut that however you want and choose whatever platforms you want to use for whatever purposes you want to achieve. But I do think there is some switching going on. I do think that there is some opting out. But opting out of social media completely is still rare from what I can see.
in that vein, I kind of want to get into some of the juicier news that's been going on over the last couple months on our favorite platforms. Let's start with Twitter. Obviously, it's been floated out there for a while that Elon Musk was going to buy Twitter, was considering it. There was a lot of back and forth. Was he trying to end the deal and sell it back or whatever? There was all sorts of controversy. Ultimately, he finally got it. And then very quickly, things changed. And it seemed for a quick moment there that Twitter was going to disappear, that he was going to drive it straight into the ground. Was that actually going to happen, or was that just us being in a overreactionary society? I don't know. But now that the dust has settled, they've lost a bazillion employees. Twitter Blue has launched. They made changes. There's all sorts of, you know, you can buy a blue check now, which kind of muddies the water for even more for what you can believe on Twitter. Where do you kind of see the future of Twitter going, its business model, and its long-term chances at success?
Yeah, to answer a question you asked, whether it was a bit of an overreaction or just kind of heightened attention on it, I would say that yes. Like initially, it was too early to tell what Elon was going to do with Twitter. And I think a lot of attention was paid to the verification, which is just shiny trophies. Like that's not really a significant portion of the service, but it got a lot of attention. And now we've seen it implemented, right? A lot of organizations have the orange check, the yellow check mark as opposed to the blue check mark. And we have the legacy people who are verified having in their profile that they are legacy verified. All these things tend to not, and the rollout of Twitter Blue, all these things tend to not be too important, in my opinion, to the foundational future of Twitter. More important is stuff that we saw even last night, and we're recording this on December 16th. What we saw last night was Elon Musk banning or Twitter via Elon Musk banning journalists that were said to have doxed him. Right. There was a controversy around the tracking of his jet. There was a Twitter account at Elon Jet, which tracked via public data how his jet was traveling and where he was in the world. Right. So because of that, people were able to ascertain his location. And one person, according to him, but there's been no police report filed as far as I can tell, according to him, harassed his child. So it caused a stir. It caused him to jump into action and Twitter to ban a list of journalists that he said in replies on Twitter to have doxed, to have contributed to that issue. Many who are those journalists or who support those journalists are looking into it and finding that they may or may not have doxed anybody and may have shared something that wasn't doxing. So the fight for freedom of speech, what freedom of speech actually means, how Twitter and Elon Musk are going to verify freedom of speech, how they are going to employ freedom of speech on the platform. That is what I think is way more significant than talking about stupid little check marks. Like that is so far from what the future of the platform is. If there is a world where Elon Musk and Twitter are using, which again is a private company, we should point to, this is a private entity, using it to either shut down or enable on one end of the spectrum, they could be shutting down free speech and banning people like with this set of journalists. Or on the other side of the spectrum, they could be opening it to a free for all where hate speech and other things are allowed to exist on the platform. Those varying degrees, that separation between those two ideas is where we're ultimately going to land, right? We're going to land on one side of the extreme or in the middle. That is the future of the platform. That will determine whether advertisers want to jump in. That will determine whether users want to continue to be on the platform. That will determine the mental health of the Twitter users. This is all where we will see the future of Twitter. This is where we'll all bear out.
And it should be noted that the employees who would be responsible for overseeing that very thing, a lot of them left. They were either fired or they left on their own accord, seeing the writing on the wall with Twitter, which I think is a very interesting thing to watch. Do you think with it being a private company now, is there a way to check Elon Musk? Is there anyone in his ear or that can say, hey, that's not, because he's very, I mean, the comparisons are very easy to make to Donald Trump in terms of just being like very reactionary, quick, whatever I want to do in the moment. I'm not going to think about the long term. I'm just going to think about what makes sense right now.
I think that depends on his priorities. I would say I don't think Elon Musk is somebody who's going to take much direction from, you know, the people close to him if he doesn't agree with that direction. He seems to be very headstrong and it has served him well, right? He has built Tesla into an absolute beast. Some of his other companies, not so much, but Tesla itself has been built on his back and into a very successful company. I think it depends on what he wants, right? If he's seeing Twitter advertisers fleeing away from the platform and not coming back, it may adjust how he wants to run Twitter. It may adjust how he reacts to that, because he ultimately, I assume, would want to run a successful business. There's also a world where he just bought it to be his own plaything and doesn't care about that. So, or wants to control the narrative and control the conversation globally, and not, and isn't so concerned about turning it into a profitable and successful business. So it really depends on which of those realities is true. I don't know the answer. I don't think any of us know the answer yet. We're kind of starting to see the breadcrumbs on which direction that's going. But it's, again, just like with when the Twitter blue conversation and the verification stuff came out, it's too early to tell. We really don't have enough data to say, but we've seen several steps along the way, right? Laying off many of the employees, which could be a cost-cutting move or could be a getting rid of dissenters move. We don't know which ultimately this is more leaning, and there's a lot more to be seen. So too early to tell, but I think the money will talk if he's trying to run a profitable business, or the either growth or decline of the user base based on his actions and Twitter's actions will be very important to this. Excuse me, but too early, in my opinion.
I follow the business and tech world very closely. I'm very fascinated by it. And once he started making all these changes to Twitter, I was like, how has this man amassed this fortune and run successful companies if this is his approach? But apparently, the playbook he's using for Twitter is similar to what he's done at Tesla and SpaceX, kind of making them take a loyalty pledge, making sure that his employees are hardcore, so that he has a combination of the most skilled and the most passionate people working for him to carry out his vision. So I'm very fascinated to see where this all goes. With that being said, I want to transition over to Instagram, which is owned by Meta, which was, you know, they made that purchase several years back, so it's not a new thing. Instagram, once the photo sharing platform, is no longer the photo sharing platform. It is basically an impersonation of TikTok at this point, which sadly, I don't know, maybe I'm just old school. Maybe I'm now reaching the stage where I'm no longer hip and I just remember how good the past was. I love just sharing photos. I like having my Twitter's the written platform, and I'll give Twitter credit. It's never really changed. It's always been like, you can tweet out words, you can tweet out GIFs, photos, videos. That's kind of always been its thing, whereas Instagram and TikTok are just constantly becoming mirror images of one another. So Instagram now becoming like TikTok, photos just not even being seen anymore. People that I follow that I want to hear from and see what they're up to just never get served to me. Ads everywhere. I don't like what Instagram has become. How do you feel about what Instagram has become, especially in the past year?
Yeah, one thing before I go into Instagram, I just want to say there may be changes to TikTok, to Twitter coming. You know, you've talked about how it's been very similar. I agree with that sentiment. It has remained ultimately what it started as, with the addition of a little bit of rich media. But it's seeming like there may be an increase in the character count from 140 to like 2,000 characters.
Oh, Jesus.
To where essentially it becomes like anything else. That brevity, I think, was one of the keys to Twitter. So we'll see if that's actually implemented. Right now, that's just being speculated and reported, but it is not official yet. But to answer your question about Instagram, I'm in a better place with Instagram because I actually think they've throttled back on what you're talking about. They overcorrected, seeing how popular TikTok became and how important vertical video is going to be to every single platform. And there is no denying that vertical video content, that full screen media, the way people hold their phones vertically, is going to be the future of social media, no doubt in my mind. Instagram overcorrected and leaned entirely into Reels, juicing the numbers there, over-serving Reels and making sure that essentially everything that anybody got was Reels. They've since changed the algorithm and scaled that back to the point where now the photo content, good news for you, Troy, the photo content, the carousel content, that type of stuff is now being served as it was previously. From what I can tell, the engagement and the audience reach on some of those has definitely come back to the point where Reels is not the only thing that's happening on that platform as it was, you know, 3, 4, 5 months ago. It seemed like it was only Reels. They've kind of struck the balance a little bit better now at this point, to the point where Reels feels more like TikTok in that it's hit or miss, right? Mm. There was a while where any Instagram Reel was a top performer. Now it feels more like TikTok, where some of them are going to reach and some of them are not, and it's going to be home runs or bunts, and it's going to be somewhere in between. So Yeah, I would say I'm in a better place with the platform. I think they've adjusted. I think they overcorrected at first, but they've come back. But there's no denying that Reels is going to be an important part of their future as TikTok continues to get a foothold and vertical video just becomes what people want.
Quick aside, if you're a creator out there, and being one myself, and whether it's individually or with the people I work with, I know how long it takes to put together a quality vertical video and to post and to make thumbnails and whatnot. If we're going between TikTok, Instagram Reels, and YouTube Shorts, say you can only choose one. You're strapped for time, resources. You can only choose one to post on. Which would you say is best?
I would say TikTok for anything. TikTok is the answer for where you should post anywhere, at any time, at any moment. TikTok is the most viral platform right now. It's the platform where people are doing the most discovery, but it's also the platform where new users are being developed, right? Your Instagram, if you've been on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, anywhere for any amount of time, you've already kind of developed that user base, right? There's not a lot of growth on those platforms unless you're a new brand or a new person. Most of the time, and this is not true in every case, I should obviously state that, but most of the time you're kind of seeing plateaued growth or even small growth. On TikTok, there's the opportunity for exponential growth, and that's where you should be focusing your time. As far as the duplicate or if you had to choose one, I think the benefit of TikTok being as relevant as it is right now and important as it is right now is the other platforms are kind of adapting to that and bending to that. And you don't have to really choose one. You can put the same type of quality of video with some minor adjustments to TikTok, to Instagram as a reel, to YouTube Shorts, as you mentioned, to Twitter even, because you can bloom the video. So most of these platforms are adapting to serve that. And so you probably are making one piece of content that you could utilize on multiple platforms if you so choose. So I would start with TikTok as my focus at all times, but I don't see any reason why you couldn't pass those to other platforms with duplication, as long as you're scrubbing watermarks and, you know, adapting as needed. But yeah.
So speaking to the future of TikTok, like we did for Twitter, just this week, there's been, and I don't know what the number of states it is, but in a couple states, and I forget which ones they are, state employees are now forbidden from using TikTok. So that's a small thing, but we've seen over the past couple of years, you know, Donald Trump, when he was president, wanted to ban TikTok. We've seen cries for banning it. Nothing has really happened. This actually feels a little bit real. Now, again, how far reaching will this be? How far will this go? I don't know. But it does seem like a legitimate step taken to curb the power and, you know, the can't deny ill effects that TikTok has. So where do you see this going?
Yeah, I think it's a very important conversation because TikTok is owned by a Chinese company and the data is being utilized in that way. There's always going to be concerns about national security. There's always going to be people that want to make sure that it's not falling into the wrong hands. And I think that's a huge problem to address. Now, whether I think it's an actual problem, whether I think that data is being used for harmful reasons, is way beyond my pay grade. I have no idea into that conversation, but I think for people to be exploring that and trying to understand what the data is being used for is natural and something that will continue to happen. Ultimately, I think TikTok is a little bit too big to fail. I think if there was a world where we were coming up upon regulation like we were when Donald Trump was president and talking about banning it, I think there would be a transfer of power to an American company or some kind of regulations put in place where ultimately I think TikTok would survive anything. It is just too popular a platform, too important a platform that I think people involved will figure out a way to make this kosher.
So I've spent much of the last year as a minimalist myself. I'm always thinking about how I use my time and how intentional I'm being. And obviously social media is a place where you can waste a lot of time. So I've dove into my own relationship and my own use of social media a lot in the past year. I've read numerous books, numerous studies, reports, and I've just talked to people in this space about how they use social media. And it's very interesting to me, and I'm curious to hear your take on this. We know about the many bad effects of using social media that go beyond just time wasting.
Yeah.
I mean, anxiety and depression rates, especially among young people, are higher than they've ever been. Suicide rates are right alongside on the charts there. And then loneliness, people are lonelier than they've ever been, especially people, you know, in your age and 40s and 50s and beyond. So there's a lot of bad with social media, but I am an optimist and I've been wallowing in the bad of it for a long time. Can you tell me, as the social media director of a large platform, what is the good of social media? What are the positives that we can get from it?
Yeah, let me start by obviously making a very simple and obvious is the word I'll use again, disclaimer. I'm not a mental health expert. I'm not a doctor. I'm not somebody who treats these things. So anything that I talk about is going to be in relation to how I utilize the platform to spread our content and my own personal use of these platforms. I can't speak as an expert on anybody's mental health. I think that's a very personal kind of journey between the person and their doctors. So having said that, the good of social media is that it connects us. The good of social media is that it allows us to tap into things that we may not have been previously exposed to, or to connect to things that we already like and enjoy in a different way and in a unique way that's not just the same experience that we share. There is so much good that has been done on social media in terms of that, in terms of finding people and connecting and feeling a sense of belonging. But in that, there's always the other side of the coin, right? There's always the other side of the sword where you can get cut, which is that there are people who can't find those communities and feel isolated and feel like they're only seeing content that makes them feel even more isolated or you know, feel like they don't belong. So it can be good and bad like anything else. I think it's all down to how people utilize the tool. If people are utilizing the tool for good, if people are seeking out that good, they will find it. It is out there, and we have, as a large world continuing to grow our population, we are able to connect with people on the other side of the world instantaneously and share their experiences, but we can also feel very isolated. So I think it really comes down to a personal preference, how users are utilizing it, making sure to take care of their mental health, making sure not to get sucked into these kind of holes or doom scrolling or anything like that. That's going to be very important. But yeah, there's lots of good. I don't think it's all bad, but I think there is a lot of potential harm as well if people are not aware of their habits and really checking it.
The good that you did speak to, though, I would push back or just question, because I wonder, yes, you can connect with people in ways that you never have been able to before, but in a way, it's also limiting. You can only extract so much from that online interaction. There's many people, and you know, I've been the beneficiary this year, especially in terms of kind of getting into MMA Twitter and the fun community, and mostly positive. All right, not mostly positive, but there's a lot of good people out there who I've befriended online, but I've never actually met. And no offense to these people I've connected with, if you and I stop talking tomorrow, I probably wouldn't think much about it to X person out there on MMA Twitter, because we haven't connected in real life. We haven't made that real connection. You can only get so much from interacting with someone online. It's good to feel less lonely, for sure. It's good to have a shared interest with other people, but it will never, ever, ever, ever compare to what it's like to connect with people in real life. And I think that is very tricky, because people put all their eggs in the basket of online interaction, and that's what leads to people being very lonely.
Yeah, a very valid counter. I will counter back with a few things. And maybe not even counter is the right word. I will add additional context to this, because I think what you're saying is completely valid. There is an artificial part of this feeling, right? Of this connectedness. I will say, though, there are plenty of relationships that are deep and rich that have developed online and may not ever manifest in real life. That happens every single day, many, many times a day. There are also relationships where they started online and were surface, and then they meet in real life and become real. So there's lots of different ways that happens. I mean, the catfishing phenomenon isn't one just accidentally, right? People feel that genuine connection with somebody and it starts online, and that happens all the time. But no doubt, to your point, that there is an artificial feeling for many people. I think that's why we're seeing the rise of platforms like Be Real, which is a social media platform that's gaining popularity now, where people are looking for that authenticity, because oftentimes on social media, people are presenting only their best selves, right? You're not really getting to know them at a deeper level. So platforms like Be Real and others that are going to continue to come up, I think are going to be the pushback against that, are going to say, we want an authentic experience. To that, I'm a little bit skeptical from the perspective that there's always a way to be artificial, right? Even in an app like Be Real, and even in the ones that are coming, there's always a way to position yourself to be where you want to be and take that picture exactly at the right moment that you wanted. I also wonder if people really do want people to be authentic online. Or rather, you know what? I think people want other people to be authentic online. I wonder if people want to be authentic themselves online. It's a very hard kind of cycle to break. I think people more want everybody else around them to be real and them to be the best version of themselves. But we will see. We will see, you know, how those platforms take hold and whether that's true. Authenticity is going to be an important part of these social platforms. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I do think that connection that has been made is just too significant and too important for our future. And also, people are voting, right? Like, people are continuing to use these platforms. So regardless of if we think there's toxicity involved, which there's no doubt that there is, that you can find toxicity online and you can find negativity if you're online for any amount of time, people are continuing to be here. And I think with the proliferation of the metaverse and other things like that, we will continue to go more online, not less. That's my assumption, is that we will continue to get more online.
I think people are continuing to use them because it's impossible not to. I don't think it's actually because, for the most part, I mean, obviously there's people who just, you know, like yourself, who just take great enjoyment in being on social media, especially because it's your job. But I think a lot of people are on social media because A, they feel they have to. They feel they have to for their business or their brand. B, because they don't want to miss out. The feeling of FOMO is very real. They don't want to feel like they're missing out on what their friends are doing or that they don't have enough information about something. And I personally think, and personal story, and maybe I'm just more conscientious of this, last week I lost my phone. I went shopping, and when I got home, I didn't have it. So I thought I left it at the mall. I wasn't freaking out for one second, and I don't have the Find My iPhone app. So I was like, wow, it's gone. It felt like a burden off my shoulders. It felt like relief. It's like, wow, I'll go get a new one tomorrow, or I'll go searching for it tomorrow, and I'll call the place. But 24 hours without this, that there's nothing I can do about it, this sounds kind of freeing. And I wonder if you told someone, I'd like to see a poll on this, if you told someone, hey, you're not going to be on social media anymore, but guess what? No one else is either. I think they would be fine with it and would actually be content with that. I think there's a big pushback against social media. I think people are finally starting to become conscious of what these platforms are doing, whether it's from, you know, that Netflix documentary or these books I'm reading. They're learning about what these platforms are doing to us, how they're selling our attention and all these tricks, psychological tricks that they're playing for, playing against us. I think people are starting to become really mindful of that. And I think they feel like they have to be on social media because they have to be, or because technology, it's a David versus Goliath battle. We're never going to outsmart the engineers. We're never going to be able to put as many parameters around our social media use because they're always going to have a better counter for us.
Yeah, once again, I agree with everything you're saying here. There is a clear addictive quality to it. There is a clear power that the platforms have to draw us in and keep us there. The one thing I would say to that is, if you are without your phone for 24 hours and feel relieved, maybe that's a sign that your habits are not right at the moment. Not necessarily like, hey, I need to shut off this tap completely every so often. Maybe it's less time per day, right? So that you don't get to the point where all of a sudden I'm without my phone and I feel unburdened. I work in social media. I'm a user of social media separate from working in social media. I feel like I have the healthiest relationship with social media that I've ever had. And it's because I just limit my time. I don't spend as much time on it per day as I used to. I don't feel like I am missing anything when I don't. But this is all a very hard line to kind of walk on and a hard thing to balance. But I would argue that it comes down to a certain level of personal accountability and having to form your own habits so you don't get to the point where I just need to be off this platform for 24 hours and not look at it. But if that's how an individual, one person processes it, it sounds like it was helpful for you, I would say go for it. You need to build the habits that are helpful for you and not harmful for you. But I think that that's something that can be done day to day, as opposed to reaching that breaking point and feeling like I need to toss this thing away or get off it. But if that's the outcome that's best for somebody, I encourage that as well. I think we all just need to have a bit of personal accountability and recognize what's happening in these patterns and be healthy. Prioritize that over everything else.
Yeah, I love what you said, and that sets up perfectly something else I want to talk about. You just said that your relationship with social media is kind of the best that it's ever been.
Yeah.
To what do you attribute that to? What what boundaries are you setting for yourself? What has propelled you to make that claim?
Yeah, quite frankly, the thing you talked about earlier is getting out in real life, right? Like, I am not as tied to my phone because I have two children now, right? I didn't have them 5 years ago. And I have two children now that require my constant attention and that I am happy to spend time with away from my phone. So I dedicate myself to that. I remove some of that time that might have been spent on Twitter or now in 2022, 2023 have been spent on TikTok and spend that time elsewhere. I also don't feel like because of the way algorithms have shifted, I don't feel like I'm getting every single piece of content that I want to get from the people I want to get it. So acknowledging that reality, I just don't care as much as what's showing up in my feed. If I see things that I like from people that I like, I'm happy to hit the heart button and happy to engage with it. If I don't, if I missed it, I'm sure I'll find it another way from them directly because I have these personal relationships with them. So I'm not as tied to the platforms and tied to the outcomes. The things that are being served up are not as essential and vital to me anymore, as much as I love the people that I follow and the people that I have these relationships with. But again, I'm one man, right? I have these habits that I've developed. There's lots of people out there who are addicted to it in a much stronger and more compelling way and can't kind of separate themselves from it. I would just encourage to figure out what works for you. That word works is doing a lot of lifting, but you need to prioritize your health, your mental health, your physical health, and making sure that you're doing what's right for you, as opposed to just getting sucked into that thing. And it can be very powerful, no doubt. I'm not trying to advocate that, like, it's easy to just disconnect. It is hard, but it can be done.
Yeah. I don't think in today's world, I don't think you need to completely shun it. I don't think you need to get a flip phone. I think you need to delete all of your accounts and delete all the apps. I think the best strategy for success, and it's something that you kind of alluded to earlier, is using these tools as a way to facilitate real life relationships, connections, rather than getting in a long text thread with someone. Just pick up the phone. Just say like, hey, can I call you at 1 p.m. and we'll talk about this if it's convenient, rather than have the text message conversation, or just use an Instagram DM as a way of setting up, hey, 6 p.m., let's get a drink tonight, rather than just having your friendship be exclusively like that. So I think if you can try to find ways to just use these tools as tools to facilitate real life connection, I think that could go a long way.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it sparked something in my mind, which is I have never done this, but I think there are a lot of people out there. I've never derived my sense of being and my sense of accomplishment and my sense of who I am from social media. Now, I know that there are a lot of people who do, right? You get popular on a platform, all of a sudden you have an audience and people are looking to you on that platform specifically to be an authority on something or to provide them with some sort of value. And that can be enchanting and that can be intoxicating and people can fall in love with that kind of feeling. I've never derived my personal identity from social media. So I've always been good at separating that. Like, I kind of just have fun and use it as a tool to the way you've described. But there are people who do, and that can be a dangerous kind of slippery slope. It can also be very lucrative and valuable and allow them to have a platform that they didn't have previously. So again, this is all very difficult and tricky. I think it's a personal thing for everybody. And I think you need to adjust to what allows you to be at your optimal mental and physical health.
Yeah. I think you're coming at it from a position of strength, being that, now I won't reveal your age, but you are older than me and my peers and kids in college right now who are struggling with this. You know a world in which this doesn't exist.
That's right.
You remember VCRs. You remember having to put the thing in and rewind the tape. You remember a world in which you didn't have a cell phone, which text messages and FaceTime didn't exist. So you kind of have some of your formative years shaped by not having these things, whereas today's kids do not. This is what they know. They grew up with this. They grew up on the Kindle and on their parents' tablet, liking things, having things be liked, which at a very early age plants the seeds for your psychology and being accepted into the tribe, which plays back into evolutionary roots. That's what all of this is. And Meta and TikTok knows that that's what likes and comments do, is it gives you a sense of validation. So you post something, you instantly check and check over and over again over the 24-hour span that IG story is up. How do people feel about me? How did people feel about this? Do they like me? Do they not like me? It's all very interesting.
Yeah, to your point, their identity, their how they look at themselves is very much reflected in social media because it is such an essential part of living, right? It is such an essential part of our lives now that it is hard to separate. In a way that I described, I am able to. So yeah, you are everything you've said is spot on. There are a lot of dangers out there in the way people continue to handle these platforms. And as I said, I don't think that will change. I think platforms will continue to try to entice users to have this kind of cycle of feedback from other people and continue to seek validation on these platforms. We will go further and further online. So platforms that are trying to develop healthy habits are the ones that I think are the ones that we should focus on.
I asked a version of this question to you last year, and I want to ask it again. Your job it is to work in social media. Knowing all of the bad things about social that we've just spoken about, does any part of you feel a sense of guilt that you are supporting these platforms that, whether they've said publicly or hide behind it, do not have our best interests at heart?
I don't, from the perspective that, and you know, this is a very complex question. I don't, from the sense that I think that I take accountability from the things that we put out into the world. And I'm talking about the brand MMA Fighting. And in my job previously, when I was working on social at ESPN, I take accountability for the things that we are putting out into the world as our brand. Now, then they go onto a platform, right? And then the platform has control of that. I think that's this is how I make my money. This is a necessary reality of the world. But my control over that is that I take accountability for the things that we produce and put into that platform, and are an agnostic to the idea that like we can just put anything out there and let the platform decide. So yeah, I take accountability for the content we create. I take accountability for the voice that we use and the messages that we spread. And that is my sense of, that is my form of ownership and control over what the platforms ultimately serve to people. But utilizing the platforms themselves, that's a very complicated question. I would say it's the reality of most businesses. It's the reality of the world we live in today. So I would be interested to see if there are brands and companies that start opting out of individual platforms. I see it from time to time. And as I spoke about, there were some people that left Twitter when Elon Musk purchased it. There are also some brands that I saw leave Twitter when Elon Musk purchased it. So I think that will happen in small scales and in certain capacities, maybe larger in the future. But no, I honestly can say I don't feel guilty about that because I am taking ownership of what we put onto the platforms.
I'll get you out of here on this subject. So in the past couple of years, Mark Zuckerberg, who's leading Meta, and then Apple and Snap and Amazon, they've all testified, you know, in front of grand juries about their companies being a monopoly. And again, the data conversation, Meta famously had that, I think, 2018 internal study where they admitted that they were up to no good in selling users' attention. So the government has had their hands on it. Nothing has actually happened. But for those of you who don't know, I read about this. At the turn of this most recent century, Microsoft was kind of in a similar position to what these companies are now in terms of being, you know, accused of monopoly, just being the ever-present dominant company in our lives. The government got involved, then bust them. Obviously, Microsoft is still a massive company that is still massively profitable, but they did kind of fade into the background a little more in terms of they weren't so ever-present. There were some regulations made. Do you see a world in which that actually happens to any of these companies where Meta gets a little bit of regulation and, you know, it's still dominant, but not in the way that it is right now?
Yeah, I think comparison to Microsoft is interesting because Microsoft is also a hardware company, right? Also a technology company that produces not just Windows or previously other softwares, but also hardware. So there's a very powerful position that they're in, right? I would compare it to Apple now, right? Apple makes a lot of software, but they also have the hardware. They are the ones who provide the tools that you actually physically use, which is a very interesting amount of power to have because that's yeah, more significant than I would argue somebody like Meta or some. Well, they also make hardware now, so it's clear that that is becoming something that's prevalent and potentially an issue, but controlling the hardware and the software is more powerful, in my opinion, than just the software. But to answer the question directly, yeah, I think government regulation is going to be important. And I think the governments seem to be taking much more of an interest. We just talked about how certain government officials are putting attention on TikTok, right? By saying what is actually truly happening with our data. I think there will be more intervention than less, obviously, as these platforms continue to crop up and grow, and there's more people using them. And that will be essential. I think it's vital. I think it's important that there is somebody watching and overseeing that. And I think it should be the government, quite frankly. I do think that there's a responsibility there to protect the citizens. The platforms themselves, I don't imagine will make major changes unless forced, right? Like, I don't imagine that anybody who is taking our data and using it for a way to make money is going to be incentivized or inclined to now all of a sudden be benevolent and not want to continue to make profits. There will need to be some intervention, whether that come from the government or whether that come from the user base who is saying, I don't like what you're doing with our data, or I don't like what you're doing on this platform, and I am now opting out. It's tricky. As we talked about, these are addicting platforms and they will continue to have users. So it's very tricky to force that change. But I do think as these things continue to grow, and again, they're relatively young in their life cycle. We talk about these platforms like it feels like I've been on Facebook forever. But in reality, it's a very young company.
I know.
It is not an old company. So as these things continue to grow and continue to mature, there will be more regulation, in my opinion, and there will be more people looking out for those potential pitfalls. And it will be harder for them to utilize data and things like that nefariously. But also, the reality is we need the government and we need anybody who's involved in overseeing this type of thing to be educated, to know what is happening on these platforms and to actually use them. And that requires younger people, and that requires people who are actually on the platforms and not people who would not know what TikTok is if somebody walked in with it on their phone. So yes, we will see this continues to be something to watch out for, but I am hopeful. I am more inclined to believe that regulation will be coming and continue to come as these platforms mature.
I was hoping you would say that it's all going to burn to the ground, and we just
it could.
It could. You actually think so? Under what? Oh, yeah. What would have to happen for that to happen?
It would be user revolt, right? It would be out of the hands of the platforms at a certain point. If in a world Elon Musk essentially turned off the Twitter user base, that everybody migrated to a new platform, Twitter would burn. Twitter would be done. There would be no use of that platform anymore. Now, certainly there'd be an opportunity to kind of win it back or figure out other ways. These things will continue to ebb or flow. Who is dominating the space will continue to ebb or flow. But it is ultimately up to the populace. It is ultimately up to us who are using these platforms to make that decision. If all of a sudden Mastodon is a platform that has become popular as people are looking for alternatives to Twitter, if all of a sudden Mastodon is offering a better offering than Twitter has, in terms of that experience, people will vote and people will use Mastodon. TikTok popped up overnight. TikTok was a platform that instantly gained popularity because it had something that other platforms didn't have and people were looking for. We are in control of this to a certain degree. Again, there's, you know, a give and take, and there's a loop where there's some addiction elements to it. But if that platform has what the people want, that will be the platform of choice. So we can choose. And if Elon Musk and Twitter are not providing what people want anymore, I could see it disappearing instantly.
I will say a prayer to the social media gods tonight that happens. Because I personally believe it's tearing us apart in a way. Obviously, politically, it's torn us apart. In the past few years, people can go down all sorts of conspiracy rabbit holes with their algorithms. I think a lot of us are, you know, forgetting how to be human. Whenever I visit New York City, where you live, and I go on the subway, just like phone, like every time I get on a plane, everyone's just looking down at their phones, and like I'm out to dinner, nice dinners for a birthday, and people just like at their phones. It drives me crazy. This is my number one pet peeve, when people have their phones next to them, you know, getting coffee or drinking with friends. I'm like, why? Be here with me. Don't be here. Be here. This is what matters. This is what truly matters. So I'm going to keep, and like I do a lot of writing on my Substack about this, I'm going to keep hammering this train. Keep this, stay connected, just use it more mindfully, more responsibly. Anytime you have the advantage to see a person, to see a friend, to get together with a colleague, do it and forget the phone. Turn it off on do not disturb for 3 hours. I got coffee with a friend the other day, phone in the car, do not disturb, 3 hours. It was great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, personal accountability and building those healthy habits will be a great way forward. But it's difficult. It is difficult.
You're Craig, you're the man. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you enjoy the final UFC card of 2022 this weekend. And I'll see you very soon in person, because I'm not having any long MMA conversations with you over text anymore.
Thank you, Troy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you again to New York Rick for joining me today. I really appreciate the conversation, the insight, And I really appreciate all of you who downloaded this episode or streamed it on the best damn audio app in the world, Spotify. I know I've been away for a while, but I've got several more conversations on the schedule in the coming weeks. I'm getting new equipment as well, so please come back very, very, very soon for another episode of the Found Generation podcast. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you very soon.